Coming up later in the show, pancreatic cancer is not a very common cancer, but it does have a higher mortality rate. And the reason is that it's often detected quite late because the symptoms are very vague. There are some experts who say that detecting it earlier might improve the chances that it's cured.
But let's go to TMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation. This is not ECT, but it does involve a helmet on your head, transmitting a magnetic impulse through your scalp to stimulate the nerves, and depending on the nerves it stimulates, it can have different effects. But the most potent evidence is in depression. And recently, a device was approved for home use of a kind of TMS. It's not a TMS exactly. So that stimulated us to think, well, we should have a conversation about transcranial magnetic stimulation. What actually is the evidence? How much does it cost to get it? Do you need to have it more than once? And how effective are these new devices, or is this new device that's coming onto the market in Australia with Therapeutic Goods Administration approval? Now, arguably, the leading expert in transcranial magnetic stimulation in Australia is Professor Paul Fitzgerald, who's director of the School of Medicine and Psychology at Australian National University. And he's been looking at TMS for decades.
We probably know more about how TMS works than we do about most things in psychiatry, but we don't have a fully integrated understanding. You know, when we apply these magnetic fields to the brain, they're strong enough to actually make a big bunch of nerve cells fire. And when we make nerve cells fire repeatedly, we tend to change how active they are. You can make areas of the brain more or less active, but it probably works through broader actions. When you make a big bunch of nerve cells, say, in the prefrontal cortex at the front of the brain fire, they connect to a variety of other brain regions. And as you stimulate those networks repeatedly, we can strengthen or change the strength of connections between different brain regions.
How much confidence does the research give you that you know exactly where to stimulate the brain if you've got depression or anxiety?
We know that we can target with TMS very, very accurately and get down to sort of millimetre or centimetre level precision. Certainly the targets that we currently use work and work very effectively. We're still doing research to see whether we can improve on that in the coming years.
So what's the process?
Yes, so somebody having a standard course of TMS for depression would have previously tried a couple of antidepressant medications. They will then undergo an assessment of suitability. There's very few things that make it unsafe to go ahead with a course of TMS. They would then undergo a sort of a titration procedure where we work out how high the machine needs to be turned up. Then we localize the area that we're going to treat. And essentially, when somebody comes in for treatment, they will sit in a chair, the coil sits on their head, they'll feel a strong tapping or twitching sensation on their scalp. And the course of treatment will take anywhere between 3 minutes and half an hour, depending on what sort of protocol is being used. They can then, when the treatment's finished, get up and go home, drive a car. There's no restrictions. A course of treatment would involve one of those daily sessions for anywhere up to about 6 weeks. Although we are now doing a lot of work around protocols where the treatment can be provided more intensively. So instead of coming in for one treatment a day for 6 weeks, people might come in for two treatments a day for 3 weeks, or even five or six or up to 10 treatments a day for a week. Although those protocols are still semi-experimental, they are starting to be used more in clinical practice.
So presumably it's not too difficult to do a randomized trial because all you need is a click on the head to make you think that you've had the treatment. What do the randomized trials tell you in terms of improvement? How long does it take to improve? And you've just addressed those.
We essentially see somewhere between 40 and 50% of patients in trials doing quite well with treatment. Maybe another 10 or 20% of patients get some benefit without it really being life-changing. And for about a third of patients, it really doesn't do a great deal. And if you're looking at a standard 6-week course of treatment, most patients don't feel a great deal for the first week and a half and then gradually report a slow progressive improvement in their mood over the weeks after that time.
Given that most candidates for this are people with what you would call treatment-resistant depression, so in other words, the existing treatments haven't worked that well, do you come off treatment drugs before you start this? Or is that part of the process that once you're starting to feel better, you can maybe tail off the drugs?
both in clinical trials and clinical practice, we tend to see about 20%, maybe 25% of patients have actually stopped medication by the time they come to TMS because of intolerable side effects or because they're just not getting any benefit from medication. But the treatment works whether patients are on medication or not. There's a more complicated question about what you do when somebody gets better with TMS and whether they should remain on medication in the longer term. And for some patients, that can be a reasonable thing to do, but for others, having ongoing maintenance treatment with TMS or even engaging in different forms of psychological treatment might be better ways for them to try to sustain the benefit that they've achieved during their acute treatment.
And do you need top-up therapy?
The significant majority of patients are likely to do so at some stage. You know, depression is a relapsing condition. For most people, it's going to come back. And what we find over time is if TMS has worked once, it will very reliably work again.
What are the side effects?
Fortunately, it's extremely well tolerated. The stimulation through the scalp can be uncomfortable and occasionally can be painful. Some people get a bit headachy afterwards. There is one very rare and concerning side effect, which is that TMS, because it's potentially making the brain more active, can potentially trigger a seizure like somebody with epilepsy would have, but it's extremely rare. I've been involved personally in the treatment of several thousand patients with TMS, and we haven't had any seizures during that time.
What are the features of somebody who's likely to respond?
We've done a lot of research over the years looking to establish whether there are good clinical predictors of response to treatment. And for better or worse, there aren't really any good ones. There are certain things, you know, patients who have very complicated histories with what we call comorbidity, other medical or psychiatric conditions that might slightly lower the chances of them responding. But we still see patients with complicated disorders who do respond from time to time. And so we don't have anything that we concretely would say to a patient, you know, you should or should not have treatment.
Does it do anything for schizophrenia or bipolar disorder?
So patients with bipolar disorder who are depressed, it can certainly be a very effective intervention for. For patients with schizophrenia, the most promising use of TMS, and something that actually goes back quite a long way, is the treatment of patients who are continuing to hear voices or auditory hallucinations. It doesn't work for a very high percentage of patients, but the patients that it does work for can have really dramatic responses. I've seen patients who've had persistent voices for decades have a complete remission of those symptoms within a week or a week and a half of commencing treatment. It can be really quite dramatic, but it's not something that's sort of widely available yet.
Is there a role for TMS in cognitive function?
I think there probably is, but not as an approved indication at the moment. So I've been working with Professor Kate Hoy from the Bionics Institute in Melbourne, who's leading a large multi-site trial investigating whether a particular type of TMS applied across multiple sites in the brain can have beneficial effects in patients with Alzheimer's disease, particularly at the earlier stage of the illness. But I wouldn't say that at this stage it's a, you know, an accepted or proven intervention for cognitive disorders yet.
Do we know how it compares to electroconvulsive therapy?
So there have been studies directly comparing TMS to electroconvulsive therapy, although the quality of those studies has been quite poor. My overall assumption is that for someone with very severe depression, ECT is probably more effective than TMS. For patients who have longer standing depression and are coming along for a therapy just because medication's not working, the efficacy difference is probably fairly limited. And what we're seeing now with some of these very intensive, accelerated forms of TMS, we're getting response rates that are similar to those that we see with ECT. And we're getting responses as quick as we get with ECT, if not actually even quicker. So there is a possibility in the next 3 or 4 years that we might actually see a fairly dramatic displacement of a lot of ECT to some of these newer, very intensive TMS protocols. That's a really exciting opportunity because the TMS certainly is far better tolerated and far safer than having ECT.
Without the memory problems.
Definitely without the memory problems, yes.
So what's the price ticket on it and is it reimbursable?
Yes, it's reimbursable. The federal government through Medicare provides funding for a limited access to TMS treatment, but they've placed a restriction such that you can really only get one significant course of treatment funded. And that's quite unusual. There's really no other areas in medicine where we say, you know, you can have this treatment, and even if it works very well with you, we won't allow you to have it again. You know, Medicare will fund multiple courses of electroconvulsive therapy. You can have repeat knee operation. But really, I think predominantly as a cost-restricting exercise, Medicare has not provided that for this treatment, which is somewhat unfair, unfortunately.
Which brings us to this home treatment that's recently been approved by the TGA. Does it work?
So the home treatment is not with TMS, but with a slightly different technology called transcranial direct current stimulation. So instead of applying a magnetic field to the brain, a very weak magnetic field is applied through a couple of electrodes placed on the scalp. There have been a series of clinical trials evaluating the use of TDCS in depression. Generally speaking, they've been conducted in patients who aren't quite as unwell as the trials that have been conducted with TMS. And although there have been some negative studies, I think overall the body of evidence suggests that TDCS does have antidepressant value. It is probably just not as strong or as effective a treatment as TMS. I'm not really sure we fully understand where that place is in the treatment armamentarium. I think one possibility might be somewhat earlier in the course of depression, particularly for patients who are struggling to tolerate antidepressant medication. And I think that is probably a niche where TDCS may well be quite a useful therapeutic option.
Professor Paul Fitzgerald, who's Director of the School of Medicine and Psychology at the Australian National University.
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Health Report.